1 year from now, you will wish you had started today.
Welcome back to the All Figured Out podcast. My name is Andrea Barr. Thank you so much for joining me today, whether it's your first time or your, how many episodes are we in? 48th time joining, maybe 49. Thank you for being here. I so appreciate getting to be in your ears. Before I hop into describing what today's episode is all about, I just want to put a little bug in your ear and let you know that you might have some professional development dollars on the table that are not being utilized. So if you work for an organization, chances are there might be some sneaky professional development dollars that are just waiting for you to use, whether it is for coaching, some facilitation work, hosting a workshop for your team, anything like that. I used to work in learning development on the corporate side, and I know that oftentimes there are professional or personal development budgets that are kind of hiding and waiting for you that you might not know about. So if that is the case, I highly encourage you to speak with your leadership team, or if you are the leader yourself, really consider how you're using those professional development dollars. They are often use it or lose it. So organizations will kind of look at how many people actually leveraged the professional development dollars that are allocated for the year. And if nobody uses them, they might actually take them away. And if you haven't used them, then you are leaving some of your benefits on the table. So something to consider, we are coming up into year end. Currently, as I'm recording this, it is November 1st. And there might be some professional or personal development that you could be getting for free from your organization. So if you think this might be you, and if you would be interested in having a chat about what it looks like to work with a coach on your career and your life as a parent, then reach out. We can book a 15 or 20 minute free consultation where we can just chat about where you are in life, what you are hoping to achieve in the end of this year and looking forward to 2024, and what some meaningful changes might be that you might need a little bit of help with creating. So I'll put that in the air. I'm also a facilitator. I love leading workshops. And so if you have a team that you would like to support and create a little bit of energy for the final push of this 2023 year, or if you're looking forward to 2024, already planning for Q1, then reach out and we can talk about a custom solution, a workshop that I could be providing to you. If you are kind of in the area, in the greater Vancouver area, we can do it live. Or if you are somewhere else and you want to fly me, sure, we can do that. But I can also do workshops and facilitation over Zoom. So that is my little plug for some services to close out the year. And now let's get into what we are talking about today and who my fantastic guest is. So today I had the pleasure of speaking with Alicia Duncan. She is a really good friend of mine who I've met in my business community. She's a fellow entrepreneur. She is an interior designer and she has an absolutely wild story. So I don't want to give too much away because I don't even think I could do it justice, but Alicia started her career off as an esthetician, which I know she would be so good at because she is very personable and she herself is very well put together. But she started off as an esthetician, had a huge career pivot where she had two young kids, went back to school, became an interior designer, and she is now a business owner with AR Interiors. They do, you know, residential, commercial, multifamily spaces, and she's built a thriving career from becoming, you know, being an esthetician to now being an interior designer. It was a pretty epic journey. Within that, she went through a divorce. She gained two stepchildren. She has a new partner. And on top of that, she unfortunately went through a huge, huge tragedy a couple of years back. Again, I won't get too much into her story. I will let her tell her story. But this tragedy and the passing of her mom has really led to her becoming a passionate advocate for mental health, and particularly in the context of medical assistance in dying, or MAID, as we call it here in Canada. So you might know this as, medically assisted suicide or euthanasia. And it's a really incredible story. It's a very fascinating topic and one that a lot of us don't know a lot about. I personally didn't know a lot about this until chatting with Alicia. She has also recently signed a publishing deal for the memoir that sheds light on her mother's courageous mental health journey and untimely passing. So there's a lot here. And she's funny. She's bold. She's powerful. She is just such a go-getter. She didn't let, you know, the circumstances that fell into her lap, you know, knock her down sideways. She, you know, got knocked down, but she is doing something with the tragedy that has been handed to her. And I just commend her for that. She's incredible. And it's a really incredible story. And I'm really so honored that she has chosen to use this platform to share her story and just to shed a little bit of light on a topic that, again, not a lot of us know about. I want to just put it out there that this is a topic that can be really sensitive in nature, and it might not be speaking to you today. If you, you know, are having mental health challenges right now and you do not want to be listening to an episode that has talks of suicidal ideation, suicide, medical assistance in dying, or anything of the sort, skip this episode. You know, not for you today. Don't push it. And please seek help. So in the show notes today, we have a ton of resources. I actually picked Alicia's brain on what are some of the best resources can be for people who are going through some of their own mental health struggles. So she very kindly shared some really awesome links and places where you can go get help. If you are in immediate crisis, please dial 911. If you are not in immediate crisis, but you would like to speak with somebody ASAP, there is a link in the show notes right now that you can click and you can call or text somebody to have a conversation to support your mental health and well-being. Huge, huge, huge advocate for this. It does not mean that you're weak. It does not mean that you're broken. So many people have mental health challenges and struggles, and I just want to let you know I am here for you. I'm rooting for you, and please seek help if you need it. So without further ado, I bring you the wonderful Alicia Duncan.
You're listening to the All Figured Out podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Barr. As a career coach for parents, a mom, an entrepreneur, and someone who spent 10 plus years in the corporate world, I still don't have it all figured out. And maybe you don't either. In this podcast, I'll share tools and strategies that I use with my clients. And in the many areas where I don't have things figured out, I'll be bringing you some amazing guest experts to help us fill in the gaps. So tune in each week as we explore how to make career and life decisions that truly work for you, your family, and your big goals. Let's make moves.
Alicia Duncan, thank you so much for joining me on the All Figured Out podcast today. I have to say, I'm actually, I'm so excited to chat with you, and I was a little bit nervous.
Really?
Yeah.
Why were you nervous?
Because I think you have such an amazing story, and there's some incredible work that you're doing that we will absolutely be getting into in terms of advocacy, and I don't know, I feel a bit of a weight and a pressure on myself to do you right by capturing the story.
Well, thanks.
I don't know. Crazy.
Well, don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. I'm a huge fan of your podcast and just you in general as a human being. So I'm really happy to be here and have another platform to share my story.
Thanks. Okay. This is so fun, first of all. This is the second time I've done a recording live. We're like literally gazing into each other's eyes.
We really should have brought the wine.
No, we're like two feet away. Okay, well, I want to start from the top. And I actually didn't. So we've been friends for a couple of years. We met through our business community. And I've never actually asked you the story of what, like, who were you before the interior designer that you are today? And so, and I purposefully didn't even ask you when we were chatting about this episode, because I'm very excited to hear the story of how you got to where you are, and I like to ask that to everybody. So take me back and the journey to becoming an interior designer. Okay. Where did your career start? And,
okay.
So I know it didn't start there.
No, it did not. I was always a really creative person, and as a kid, it's funny kind of looking back now that I didn't just go right out of high school and become an interior designer, frankly, because I didn't know what that was. I used to draw floor plans to scale, although I didn't know what that meant. Of course, everything had like the double Beauty and the Beast staircase and, you know, as a 7 or 8 year old would draw. But yeah, after high school, I took a year off. I traveled and was just trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And I thought maybe I would get into marketing, actually, funny enough. And I did half a semester and decided that was not the right path for me. So, I took another 6 months off and then thought maybe I would get into massage therapy or, you know, something related to that. I always loved talking to people and wanted something that would be kind of social, but I just didn't really want to commit to anything quite yet. So I actually did an aesthetics program. I was an esthetician for 12 years.
Come on.
Because I went to school, became an esthetician, and then I met my now ex-husband, and we had a couple of kids, and all of a sudden it was 12 years later, and I just thought, like, oh my gosh, this was never meant to be a lifelong career, although I loved the people that I met, and I had amazing relationships with my clients.
You would be so good in that space. Also, now I'm looking at your eyebrows and just you in general. I'm like, oh, this makes sense. How did I not? Maybe I did know this, but no, I don't remember knowing this. That's so awesome.
Well, you know, I think I always had it in me to be an entrepreneur because I had my own business as an esthetician. And then I just always felt there was something more for me. So when I was 29, I went back to school to become an interior designer. At that point, I had learned what that meant and what that was. And so I went to a three-year program at BCIT. Mm-hmm. That's where I met my now business partner. And yeah, just kind of skyrocketed from there.
Wow. Yes. Wow. And that's a jump, because I know that interior design is no small feat. Like, you're basically becoming like an engineer architect in the design space.
Absolutely.
Like, you work in programs like AutoCAD, I know.
Yes.
And like, these are like serious, there's like liabilities too. Like, you need
Absolutely.
To be, of course, you're not signing off on things like an architect, I guess. They're
of
more
course.
Of like the, I don't know why I'm babbling about this, but that's a huge thing to do at the age of 29. And you had two kids at this point.
I had two little kids at that point, yeah. My kids were, I think, 4 and 6 when I went back to school.
Oh, my gosh.
And I lived in Mission. I actually still live in Mission, but I was commuting to Burnaby, so it was an hour drive each way with traffic. So it was really hard, and it was really grueling, and, you know, really proud of myself for getting through it.
Good
and
for you.
Yeah, but yeah, you know what, I'm glad that you kind of babbled on a bit about it, because a lot of people think a decorator and a designer are the same thing, and they are not. So we are working in AutoCAD, we are doing construction drawings for permit application, we do residential and commercial design, also multifamily. So we also decorate, which is the fun stuff.
Yeah.
but we do a lot more than that. So
yeah.
We can pick your pillows and specify the insulation for your walls.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, and I know I can ask you anything. So at this point, 2 small kids, 4 and 6, you're doing a 3-year program. You said you did reference, so you've already talked about it, the now ex-husband.
Yes.
How was your relationship at that point?
He worked from home, so that was, you know, how I was able to actually go to school with my kids. He was the one that was walking them down the street to kindergarten, and obviously it was challenging. I was gone, and then I was home and locking myself in my office, and there's a lot of tears shed in that time, and it was hard on our relationship. You know, I wasn't bringing in any income other than student loans, and he was running his business, which, you know, we went through the 2008 recession, so there were some really hard times. Yeah, we went through bankruptcy, and it was tough. I mean, all of these things, I'm sure, contributed to our eventual demise, but, you know, anyway, to each their own. We'll get into that more, but
yeah,
it was a good thing.
Yeah.
It was a good thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Hard, but good.
Okay.
Yeah.
And looking back on that career pivot, given this is a podcast for parents and there's a lot of people listening and that I get messages from who are like, oh, I'm like thinking about a pivot or a career change, but now it feels like I'm handcuffed. You know, there's like the golden handcuffs, which is like you're handcuffed to the corporate world.
Yes.
I feel like there's another term that needs to be created with parenting, like the parenting handcuff, where you feel like you need to stay in a position of safety and security and stick with what you know, because it just everything feels so big when you become a parent. So, I mean, how was your experience with that and going back with 2 small young kids and being like, I don't know if you felt that way, this has to work.
Well, initially I wasn't going to go back full time. I was going to take one course, which I initially started with, one course on a Saturday.
Cool.
And I, you know, thought this is good. This is enough to fulfill me, and I'm working towards something. I think it was going to be like 10 years for me to finish the program. And funny enough, it was like a meeting with an almost stranger that completely changed my path. And she's now a very dear friend of mine. I was friends with her sister-in-law. And so her sister-in-law had reached out to me and said, hey, my sister-in-law is thinking about taking the program. Would you mind chatting with her? So she came over to my house for coffee. We had never met before. And she was going full steam ahead. She didn't have kids at that time. And she was like, why aren't you doing this full time? I'm like, Who are you?
Wow.
I don't know. I have 2 small kids. And she was like, look, you can either go through it in 10 years you know, and then start your path, or just get it done, rip the Band-Aid off. And I thought, yeah, what am I so afraid of? You know, I think so many people make decisions based on fear or the unknown. And obviously, you know, having two young kids was a hard one. But I think in the end, you know, my kids are 17 and 15 now. And
so wild. You look like you're 15 yourself.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Stop. But, you know, my kids said, looking back on it now, like they thought that was really cool mm-hmm. that I was going to school, and they, you know, see it now as something that, you know, showed, it gave a really good example, I guess, of like, pursue your dreams, mm-hmm. go for it. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, big rewards take big risks. And yeah. I think that's a lesson in itself. So yeah. I don't think you necessarily have to go that big, you know. I think I would have been happy as well picking away. I think I would still be in school. Oh, my God, I would have graduated this year.
No.
Yeah. If
happy
I'd done one
graduation. Can you imagine?
No. Actually, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Wow.
Looking back, I would have like just graduated had I picked away one course at a time. One course
wow.
term.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting how your life would just be different?
It would like, be so different.
You would have been working as an esthetician the whole time, which sounds like you loved, so there's
yeah.
nothing wrong
yeah.
with that. But you'd be finishing this at the time when your kids are 15 and 17 versus you've been an established and very, you know, you've been a very successful interior designer for the past 7 years
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
And so you're established and your kids are established now. Like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, that's funny. I just kind of had like a little aha moment
yeah.
there. That was fun. Yeah.
I think there's something to be said about you going and taking one course first, too. I'm such a proponent for that. Of
yeah.
like, what's a test you can do? What's a small... And of course, sure. Med school, like, not a thing. Law school, maybe not a thing. You
sure.
can just, like, take a course.
Sure.
However, what is a test that you can do to see if you like it?
Of course.
Share, like, a personal example. I went to... I had the privilege of going to South Africa when I graduated university. And I did law and human rights there. And I did this volunteer program because I wanted to be a lawyer. Did that. And was like, oh, hell no. I don't want to be a lawyer. Nothing wrong with lawyers. It just wasn't for me. And had I not done that small test, because there's not that many, like, you can't take a,
no.
like, a little law course, like,
no.
just test out law school.
Just going to try the bar.
Yeah. I'm just going to try the bar. Just, like, see how it goes. It would have shaped, like, yeah, just changed history for me. And
yeah.
so you took that one course and you were like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah. Well, originally I had even done that one marketing course to go like, yeah, this
right.
is not for me.
Right.
This is not for me. So, yeah, actually I've done that a couple of times in
yeah.
my life. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
for me, I applied for a grant and it covered my first term tuition and my textbooks.
Come on.
So it didn't even cost me anything. And it was on a Saturday.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much thinking and researching and talking to people that you can do until you hit a point where you're like, you just got to try it.
You just have to try it, you know?
And commit. Like, that's like a little bit of a financial commitment, although yours was covered by a grant.
Yep.
But like time commitment, taking a Saturday away from your family.
Yeah.
Like a little bit of commitment
yeah.
and a little bit of a test.
Yes.
Like that can really, it sounds like it paid off.
Yeah, it totally did, you know, and it actually stemmed, I had gone to a workshop years ago with my mom, and this woman had written a book, Tam Akeeves, This Time I Dance, I believe it was called, and she was a lawyer, top of her firm in New York, had gone to Harvard, graduated, but she'd always wanted to be a writer, severely depressed, and finally one day her psychiatrist was like, you know, before you leave the planet, maybe you should try leaving your job. And she was like, you know, the thought never even crossed my mind. You talk about the golden handcuffs, right? So she did. She quit her job. People thought she was insane, especially her Jewish mother, who just like, that was her mother's dream for her.
Mm.
And yeah, she ended up writing this New York Times bestselling book. She's now a motivational speaker. And she had said during that time, you know, 1 year from now, you will wish you had started today. And I just thought,
say it again.
1 year from now, you will wish you had started today.
Man.
Yeah. So that's what it was for me, really. It was right after that I signed up for the big info session at BCIT. That's what it's called. And eventually I ended up being a speaker there because I was a student blogger while I was in school and ended up doing, like an intro speech at their next big event. And yeah, went from there. So yeah,
wow.
Sometimes you just need to take that first leap,
mm-hmm.
even if it's
step.
A little one, that first step.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like the person who's like, oh, I want to start like a cooking blog just for fun, like even hobbies. And you're
of
like,
course.
well, had I started this hobby, say, a year ago, I would be, like, somewhat proficient in whatever this skill is, even if you're spending a small... There's so many... Yeah, there's just so many applications for that.
And you don't even have to leave your job to do it, you know? No. Like, her message that came out of that was one of her clients also wanted to be a writer, but she had children that were in university and, you know, she needed the benefits, whatever. So her boss that she despised ended up becoming the muse for the evil villain in her book that she wrote. And it took her a little bit longer, but she got to do both, right? So you don't always have to, like, you can have it all.
Oh my goodness, that is so cool. And talk to me about, I love hearing people's just day to day. What is it like to be an interior designer? So we've talked a little bit about the industry and how the difference between a designer and a decorator. What does your day look like and what do you get to do?
Oh my gosh, I think one of the things that I love most about design is every day is different. You know, and that was one thing, the big difference between being an esthetician and a designer is, you know, the conversations were different being an esthetician, but it was the same repetitive things over and over and over again.
Arguably the same conversations.
Yeah.
Different people.
Different people, a lot of the same conversations, for sure, for sure. You know, so some days I'm in the office all day long, like you said, I'm on AutoCAD, I'm doing permit drawings, I'm... you know, doing site plans and specifying light fixtures. Some days I am on site with clients and, you know, doing walkthroughs, making sure that their lighting is installed in the correct spot or, you know, reviewing layouts with them. Sometimes I'm talking to potential new clients. So that's always really fun for us, talking about the design process, concept design, you know, getting to get into people's minds, like, you know, what do you love? You know, how can we make your home a sanctuary? Or, you know, what do you need in your office space? Or, you know, we've done an affordable housing project recently, a 91-unit apartment building. And so that was really interesting in itself, you know, understanding code and, I mean, more deeply, right? BC Housing and accessibility and, I'm always learning. That's what I think I love most. Every day is different. I'm learning something new every day.
That's so incredible. This is going to be so left field. Can we touch on the house as a sanctuary for a second?
Yeah, of course.
I remember originally I was dreaming about having you on, and I was like, that could be the episode, but this is going to go in a million different directions, and there's so much more we have to talk about.
Yeah.
But let's talk about that for a second. Like, how does one, what are some tips you have for, like, making the home a sanctuary, even if you're not going to do renovations per se? Or some small things that people can, like, do, especially as a mom yourself, you know what I'm talking about,
yes.
Like the clutter, the stuff everywhere.
Yes.
How do you do it?
I know. Well, you know, we always tell our clients it doesn't matter how good your house looks if it doesn't function. So, you know, a lot of the education that we learned was about the psychology of design, right? Understanding how people live and work and move within their spaces. So that's really how the design starts. You know, you get to know someone when you're doing a residential design project. Do you shower with your partner? Do you like to have a bath? How do you bring your groceries in? You know, these are all things, you know, if you actually get to build your own custom home, you get to design these things. A lot of times we're doing renovations or it's a kitchen. You know, how can we make this kitchen more functional? So that's always where it starts. We say all the time that this may sound dramatic, but an organized closet can change your life. And I do think it's true.
It's true.
There was an episode of Seinfeld years ago where Elaine, I'll do the Seinfeld reference here.
I did not watch Seinfeld, but everyone else listening probably has.
Probably. Okay, yeah. Well, it doesn't really matter. Elaine's this hectic human being. I feel like I'm Elaine sometimes, you know, ADHD stuff around everywhere. And she gets her purse mixed up with another person in a coffee shop or in a restaurant, I can't remember. And the person that she switches purses with by accident is highly organized. So Elaine's on her way to a job interview. She gets a run in her tights. This person has a spare in there. You know, all of this stuff happens. Her day comes together. She gets the dream job. You know, amazing. You know? In the meantime, she's made plans. She's connected with the woman. They're going to exchange purses the next day, whatever. They meet up, and this woman has turned into Elaine because she has the disorganized purse. You know, she's crazy. Hair's wild. She's lost her job. You know, stuff. And I thought it was such a funny episode years ago. And I think it's even funnier now, right? Because, having an organized kitchen, an organized pantry, an organized closet, your kids' closets. Like, if you don't have to spend the time looking and fighting to make things work, it just brings so much peace. It brings so much peace to someone's life. And getting rid of that clutter. Mm-hmm. Getting rid of the clutter. Surround yourself with things that bring you joy, you know?
Marie Kondo it.
Marie Kondo your home, people.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true, though. Yeah. If there's some jeans that you're holding on to.
Oh, yeah, the jeans.
You know, or like, you know, we'll get more into this. My mom passed away a couple of years ago, and a lot of her things now I keep out, you know, instead of putting them away in a box. You know, they're on my bedside table, and, you know, these things bring me joy to have them out. And I think a lot of people don't honor these special things because, yeah, design is so much more than just having a beautiful space. It's about feeling beautiful in your space, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. I like, in my, like what you said, there's like the yin yang, like the functionality side, like the, perhaps the yin is like the memories and like the sentiment and the psychology and all that. And then like the yang, like the functional side is really important. And what I'm kind of hearing what you're saying as well is like, how do you use the space?
Yeah.
Like, do you have a bath? If not, then like, who cares about putting effort or whatever into the bath if like you actually don't use the bath?
Totally. Or let's have a 12-foot shower.
Yes.
Go for it.
How do you use your kitchen?
Yeah.
Like, just because most people, I feel like the word should would come up a lot, where it's like, well, most people have their utensils like in a cupboard drawer, say like the cooking utensils right beside the stove. But if that's not actually how you naturally, like where you would naturally go to use the cooking utensils, maybe you're the person that wants to keep them on the counter. Then do it.
Totally.
Get some like nice looking utensils and like call it a day.
Absolutely. Yep. I had that conversation yesterday.
No
way.
Do
you want to have your cooking utensils in the drawer or do you want the pullout beside, you know, where they just go into a bin?
Yes.
And I'm like, I don't really care.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yes.
Both are right.
Do people often be like, oh, well, what do other people do or what should I do? Like, do you get that question a lot?
You know what's really funny?
Yeah.
I don't.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people, because I, you know, I'm all about visualizations, and I'm like, okay, imagine you're standing at your stove. Where are you reaching?
Mm.
You know?
Are you left or right-handed?
Are you left or right-handed?
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, some people use their microwave 18 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
I do not, and so I want mine hidden away. I don't want it. I don't want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I have, like, a whole coffee bar area because I don't want my kitchen area to have appliances on the counter because it's visual clutter and I don't like it. And some people, they've got a beautiful espresso machine and they want it there.
Yeah.
It's all different.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Cool. I love that. I feel inspired. I wanted to go do a little visualization.
Yeah.
Audit.
I'll come over. I'll help you.
Oh my gosh. How intimate. Like that must be. I was talking to somebody who was a, what's it called? Helps with design style. Stylist. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And that's also one where it's so intimate.
Like, it's very intimate.
Designing someone's home and like walking through their current space and everything, it's a very intimate experience.
It really is, yeah. People are always very apologetic, like, oh, I'm so sorry, it's so messy. And I'm like, man, I have 4 kids between the ages of 9 and 17. Trust me,
yeah.
I've seen it all.
Yeah.
Don't even worry.
Yeah. There's been like feces on the wall. Like it's all good.
Yeah.
You're like,
The not so glamorous side of parenting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So you are an incredibly resilient human being and you just are such a go-getter. You just go after and like take life by the reins and you're like, cool, I have this idea. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do it. Fast forward to, you know, 7 years later, you're establishing your design career. You have now 4 kids because you've got 2 bonus kids, stepkids, whatever you want to call them.
Yep.
Ty, your partner, like you've built this incredible life for yourself. And then something major happens in your life.
Yeah.
That is horrendous.
Yeah.
Walk me through the story.
In February 2020, my mom was in a minor car accident, suffered a concussion, and we all know what happened in March 2020, COVID lockdown. Mm-hmm. So she was very isolated. She had a common law partner, but my mom, like me, was very social, and loved to travel and be around friends and family, and she was an amazing grandma to my kids, and it was really tough for her, and we couldn't see her. You know, and with the symptoms of the concussion, she couldn't FaceTime. She had trouble looking at screens, so even texting was hard. She couldn't even really read books anymore. So it did get a little bit better for a period of time. And then going back into the fall when the COVID restrictions kind of were put in place again, she just became more and more depressed. And we didn't know this at the time, obviously. My mom was always, you know, glass half full kind of person, psychiatric nurse. So she was really good at you know, making sure that everyone else felt really safe and comfortable, and she was the rock, and she really kind of kept us out of the loop of what was going on.
Is she still working at this time?
She was still working casually as a psychiatric nurse, so she had retired and then was working in the community, in a couple different communities. And yeah, all of a sudden, you know, she was just like, I'm not doing well, I'm losing a lot of weight, I can't figure out what's going on. She was going through a lot of testing at the doctor's office. They ruled out everything from cancer to HIV to parasites. Like, they really were trying to figure out what was going on for her rapid weight loss. And my sister and I started speculating that she was actually limiting her diet herself, and she started refusing treatment, and it went downhill really quickly from there. Mm-hmm. So middle of October 2021, we found out that my mom had applied for medical assistance in dying, and we went into crisis mode. We applied for a warrant for her arrest under the Mental Health Act, an emergency hearing at the provincial court. We were granted. We had enough evidence to show that she just wasn't herself, and she was acting irrationally.
Didn't have the capacity to make that decision
at that
point?
That's right. Okay. Yeah, that's what we still believe, that she did not have the capacity to make such a final decision for herself. So the MAID application was postponed, and she was so devastated by that because she had suicidal ideation and she wanted to die so badly because she'd wanted her suffering, her mental suffering to end, that she slit her wrist and was put into a psychiatric unit. So as horrible as that is, I mean, we were relieved at the time because honestly, we felt she was safe and she was protected. But in British Columbia, where we live, there is a legal maximum 72-hour hold that a person can be held against their will in a situation like that before they undergo another assessment. And my mom, being a highly educated psychiatric nurse, knew all of the right things to say to be found legally sound of mind. And 4 hours later, we got a text message that my mom was dead.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank
you. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. I'm so sorry for your mom suffering.
Thank you.
And all that. So, oh my goodness, so she did the assessment to assess if she would qualify for MAID, medical assistance in dying, medically assisted suicide.
I mean, it's a really complicated process. So she had been assessed by two separate doctors 10 days prior to her initial date that she was supposed to die. We had that day. Mm. We kept her alive for 4 additional days. Mm. So she was assessed by two separate doctors. And those doctors deem if you are, anyway, we could really get into it, but there's two different tracks right now with MAID that you can assess the program. MAID, again, is medical assistance in dying. So track one, you have a terminal disease, you're facing imminent death. Track two, you're not dying imminently, but you do have a condition that you find to be intolerable to yourself. That's a 90-day assessment period, which you can be bumped from track two to track one, by the way. We still don't know what track my mom died under, because I have been trying to get those assessment records. And as her executor, I have her full medical records, and I should be able to access this, but Fraser Health and the health authorities are blocking me, and the police, actually. So I guess that kind of goes into the next stage.
Yes.
There was enough evidence to show that the reasons that they listed on my mother's death certificate were cachexia, frailty, so basically muscle deterioration. She was frail, and central sensitivity syndrome. My mom was never formally diagnosed with that, and someone being frail because they're starving themselves is not a reason to die.
Yeah.
So with that evidence, we took that to the police, and the police also felt there was enough evidence to investigate, and the first investigation into a MAID death in Canada was launched.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Unfortunately, 8 months later, because Fraser Health and the privacy laws prohibited us from gaining access to any further records. We didn't have enough evidence to continue the investigation, so the investigation was closed. A person's right to privacy remains even after they're dead. But
even if you're the executor, even if you have a case open and you need that information to continue on with your case.
Yeah. It's really complicated. We've my sister and I have retained one of the top Canadian law firms, and so we're actually going against it right now because I, as the executor, want to ensure that my mom died a lawful death.
Mm.
And I don't know if she did.
Mm.
And that is, I mean, really at the crux of the argument.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really, yes. I'm the executor.
Yes.
She assigned me as the executor 2 months before her death when she knew she was planning this. I didn't know.
Mm.
And gave me permission to speak with a psychiatrist during this process. So I know she would want me to have access to these records.
Mm-hmm. And your investigation is, did she die lawfully?
Lawfully.
Or if not, was it considered murder?
Yeah. Or criminal negligence.
Okay.
By the doctors.
Yeah.
I mean, I think really the main thing is that the laws surrounding medical assistance and dying in Canada are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
They're very vague.
Mm.
They leave a lot of room for interpretation.
Mm.
And vulnerable people are dying
when
they actually need help to live, not to die.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that's worth, I know we've just spoken briefly about the subject and the story, and I really wanted to save it for the mic. And,
yeah.
And I know that I asked you the question because, again, I feel so comfortable with you and you're such an open book. I was like, Alicia, what is your stance on MAID? And I will have you elaborate, but I know that you said it's not that I'm against MAID. It's that there needs to be better safeguards if you're going to have such an impactful, huge, this is a huge, huge piece of, what would you call it, legislation?
Legislation, yep.
You've gotta, like, this is incredible. Like, it's an incredible onus on our government and on the medical system to ensure that it's done right.
Absolutely.
Because this could be really utilized in a poor way when, like you said, people need more help to live and live without suffering.
Yes.
So that they don't feel that their only option is this.
Absolutely. And I mean, yeah, my sister and I are not against MAID at all. I know some people who have gone through the process with a terminal parent or grandparent, and it's been a really beautiful experience for them. And that person was provided, you know, as they term it, a death with dignity.
Mm.
And I've always believed in that. And I think that is amazing because I don't want anyone to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened so rapidly and internationally, Canada's being looked at as this reckless country because we just keep expanding the law when we haven't done enough research to look into it. And so many advocacy groups have come forward since, Indigenous groups, disability groups, you know, just mental health groups, just saying, we need to look at this more closely.
Mm.
We cannot continue to expand the laws when the current legislation isn't working, when people are slipping through the cracks. How many casualties does there have to be before we say enough is enough? And, you know, in the beginning in 2016, when it was legalized, it was for people who were terminal. Then it expanded for people that were suffering intolerably, but they weren't terminal. And on March 17th, 2024, it will be expanded to people with mental illness alone and also to mature minors. So we're talking 12-year-olds. Nobody knows this. This was supposed to have come into law this year on March 17th, 2023. And so many people spoke up against this, including my sister and I, that the government had to listen. They created a committee. And this committee's job was to go out and speak to doctors and professionals and expert witnesses. That's where my sister and I came in. We were an expert witness to speak at the House of Commons. And really, there was just so many stories of people that were accessing MAID out of desperation and not dignity. And it was alarming. And so they've put forward their recommendations now. And we are working with local members of parliament. We are trying to stop the expansion for people with mental illness alone. I do want to elaborate a little bit more on that as well, because a lot of people have said to me, well, who are you to determine if someone's mental suffering is not as great as someone's physical suffering? And that is not even our point at all. I believe that if our healthcare system provided access, quick access to people with mental illness, continuity of care over the years, proper medication, that a lot of these people would have the support that they need and it wouldn't come to that point. In the papers about a month ago, there was a woman that went to Vancouver General Hospital. I don't know if you heard about this. She's in school to be a counselor, and she has also suffered from clinical depression for years. She was having suicidal ideation. She went to the hospital for help, and they offered her MAID. And so this is where our system is failing these people now, you know? It also sends the message to people with disabilities that your life isn't worth living, you know, because you have a disability. There was a man in Chilliwack before my mom died, clinically depressed as well. He was deaf in one ear. And they said, well, do you find that to be intolerable to yourself? And in his moment of darkness, he said yes. And he died. This was in Chilliwack. I have met the family now. They were also an expert witness. You know, they're fighting back against this, but you can die now if you're deaf. Jeez. So this is what I mean, right? Yeah. Like, we need to tighten up the laws. We need to tighten up the safeguards before we expand them. And that's what my sister and I are advocating against.
Yes. And so I hear there's two really big tracks or two really major glaring issues in your perspective. Yeah. One being the fact that this is too accessible. It's becoming, okay, I don't want to use the word cop out. That's not what I'm saying, but it's too accessible to those who might be having a moment of weakness or in a period of darkness, not weakness. It's not weak to have a mental illness.
Absolutely.
But it's too readily accessible without the second track being there being enough in our, say, medical system or enough support, enough to prevent this from happening or prevent a person from getting that to that point where it feels like the only option to them, or even interventions.
Oh, you know, my mom was waiting to see a specialist for central sensitivity syndrome. You know, I'm sure she had that. It's kind of an umbrella term for things like fibromyalgia, etc. She was on it was over a year wait for her to get to that. Her appointment was 2 weeks after she died. It was a year for her to see a specialist, but she was approved to die within 10 days. You know, and that can be sped up.
Yeah.
Like, if they say you are about to go, they can just do it instantly. You don't even have to wait 10 days anymore. You can die within a 24-hour period now. But if you want to see a specialist for any sort of condition you have,
yeah.
I mean, we know how the wait.
Yeah.
The wait times are now.
And it's like, if they could make that call to assist her in dying that quickly, it's like, shouldn't she be put to the top of the, like, it's like, this is life and death. Like, why can't that specialist swoop in and be like, okay, let's really talk, like, hey, I'm realizing this is.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, there's so many.
Well, and this is one of the other caveats. So the law says that you need to be assessed by a specialist in whatever field of the condition that you have, and my mom wasn't.
No, because there was other thing, because that was causing other symptoms and other things to pop up, like the central sensitivity, starving herself, muscle, like those were all the grounds in which she died, which ended up being additional issues that popped up because of the original issue, which was a traumatic brain injury, potentially ear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was assessed by a GP and a gynecologist.
What?
Over the phone.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So, yeah, it's tricky, right? And you know, you can't unhear it.
No.
But nobody's hearing about it.
No.
No.
Why do you think nobody's hearing about it?
I mean, a lot of people don't listen to mainstream news anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big one. Even then, it doesn't get a ton of airtime. Mm-hmm. You know, more sensationalized news stories take the top of the priority list. I get it. It's an uncomfortable topic for people to talk about. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't want to hear it. There's a lot of people that believe under any circumstance, a person's autonomy is like their right. That's their right. And it doesn't matter how much it hurts you. A person can do whatever they want with their own body. And so it's a tough battle. It's a really tough battle, I think.
If you were to wave your magic wand and say, let's talk short term first.
Okay.
What would you want to happen? What would you want to be done in the next year?
Well, you know, we've been triaging our efforts. So the first one is to stop the expansion of MAID for people with mental illness as a sole condition. That would be the first. The second would be to, you know, to increase the safeguards and educate the practitioners that are going through this as well, you know. You know, some of the recommendations that we said to, you know, this committee was that families should absolutely be involved in this process, you know. I was contacted by a doctor from California, and she got a phone call from a doctor on Vancouver Island to let her know that her mom was dead. You know, she hadn't seen her mom in a couple of years during COVID, and her mom had gone to the hospital, and now she was dead. And she didn't know what to do. She found us online. She reached out to us. And this is happening more and more. I think what the government isn't considering is the collateral damage, you know, of this. And I think families 100% should be involved in the decision-making process. Interviews should be done by the same doctor over a period of time. There was no continuity of care. My mom was assessed by 4 different psychiatrists the week that she died, different ones, and over the phone, you know. I mean, those are just a couple of, you know, the things that we would love to see in place. But again, you know, kind of going back to the conversation about people really just need help to live and to live well, and not, they don't need help to die. So yeah, that's, I don't know. It's such a complicated issue, and I don't know what all of the answers are. I don't know if anyone really does. And I am grateful that our government has taken a step back at this point, you know, to go like, look, we do need to maybe take a second glance at what's going on. Because you can't go back.
No.
You can't go back after you make that decision.
No. No, you can't. It's not like starting a medication and saying, oh, this isn't really working out.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, you've stepped into this role of being an advocate and into advocacy work for the first time. It's almost like this is the next chapter for you to, you know, relate this back to your career story. Like this next, you know, part of your life journey and your career journey is advocacy work. I know you've taken a tiny step back from work to allow for this. For this work to continue as well. And I want to just highlight what you said about the triaging. I think that's such an interesting, it's a really cool way of putting it, where as somebody myself who I have not done formal advocacy work, I know you had mentioned to me previously, this is your first foray into this world.
Oh, I never wanted to do this. Are you kidding me? This is hard work. Yes. It is hard work.
And you don't want to be the person that's like, I feel forced into this because I've been so dramatically affected by this. Like, you don't wish this upon anybody.
Yeah.
You're like, I want to live in my, like, rose-colored glasses world still.
Yeah.
We all do. But what you are really kind of, I don't know, some inspiration I'm getting from you is that sometimes these issues that we feel really strongly about, like, my family has been affected by serious mental health issues, and it feels so big. Like, it feels like a really big thing to take on. Like, it feels almost too big. But what I heard you say was we had to triage. And I know you were talking about, I think maybe you're talking about on a grander sense, like in British Columbia right now, what we need to triage first and foremost is preventing MAID from expanding. Or maybe, is that federal?
It's federal.
Federal.
Yeah.
MAID from expanding to just mental health alone. But what I'm also hearing you say is, like, you and your sister were like, okay, we've got to triage, like, what's the issue we're taking on? Because you're like, what we all really need, of course, is to help people live.
Yes.
First and foremost. But that's not the most pressing issue at this moment in time. So it's like getting really clear on the bigger vision, which is that, I imagine, so that we don't even need to be talking about MAID. But realizing, okay, what's the first step that I can take in this advocacy work? And what's the impact I can have? You spoke at the freaking House of Commons. Like, that's that's insane. I remember when you were we were in our business group and you were just like casually, you're like, oh, my one of the, we talk about our wins of the week and you're like, oh, my one of the week is that I've been like, I'm going to be speaking at the House of Commons. And it was this like beat and silence and all, literally all the Zoom faces were just like jaw dropped being like, oh my gosh. And again, you're like, I don't want to be here, but like, this is where I am. Anyways, all this to say, like, I feel really inspired by like, what's that small step?
Yeah.
Kind of like you were saying about, oh my God, look at this connection, like your career and getting into interior design. Like that feels like a really big thing to completely switch your career. What's the first small step?
What's the first small step? You know, I think it was Mother Teresa that said, you know, think globally, act locally.
Oh, yes.
Right? You know, and it was like, what can I do today? Because I think a lot of people think this is too big and there's nothing that I can do to change it. Mm-hmm. But you know how our government works? Because I didn't really know how it worked before this all started. We have members of parliament that represent our small areas. And those representatives, it's their literal job to do what we tell them to do.
Hmm.
So if they get enough letters from enough of their constituents saying, this is important to me and I'm not going to vote for you again if you don't do this, you can put pressure on them. Hmm. And then they go to the House of Commons. There's a certain number of seats. It's not a lot, people, you know? And it's made up of the Liberals and the Conservatives and the Green Party, whatever. And you can say, this is important to me. When this bill is coming up, Bill C-314 right now, this is another one, they're trying to stop the expansion. You can write your MP, you can call them, you can say, this is important to me. I want you to vote in favor of this bill.
Wow.
And if enough people do it, then that's when laws happen. This is when they change. It goes through the House of Commons to Senate, and then it's approved.
So that's democracy.
That's democracy.
That's how it works.
That's how it works. And every voice matters.
How ridiculous that, like, I'm not going to lie, and I don't feel shy saying this because I think there's going to be people listening who are like, yeah, I'm with you. I didn't really know how it worked.
Oh, I didn't either.
I don't really know how, like, I didn't know it. That's easy. And I know on social media you would put, hey, message me and I'll send you scripts. Like, you would literally said, I have written a script of the email template that you can send to your MP. And it's like, it's a very normal email.
Yeah.
It has like all the proper terms of like what exactly you're requesting. Mm-hmm. So I think that's super helpful. But by no means is it this like laborious, like, or arduous would be the word, like an arduous process that you need to go through and you're just sending it a letter.
People ask us all the time, like, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, the easiest thing you can do is take 5 minutes, send a letter to your MP.
Okay.
Tell them that you do not support this expansion. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest one.
Mm-hmm.
We have a GoFundMe to pay for our ever-expanding legal fees if you want to contribute to that.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, just sharing my mom's story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, nobody is hearing about this right now. There's a block on Facebook and Instagram right now for news, right? Nothing can be shared anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people don't have any idea of what's going on. So talk about it. Talk to your friends, talk to your parents. Hey, like, would you ever consider MAID? You know, even the police officers that investigated this said, you know, you have created some amazing space for conversations around our dinner tables, round tables at the police station.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their job is to uphold the law and they didn't even know, you know, the full extent of it.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy. Education, advocating.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that you can do, and it's easy. Mm-hmm. It's easy.
Okay, well, we're going to put all the resources in the show notes so that people can take these steps. So to reiterate, can you just reiterate, like, where exactly people, like, what people can find in the show notes for what they can do to support and to join this cause?
Yeah, absolutely. So in memory of Donna Faith, that is our website, .com. you can go there, you can read the news articles about my mom, you can see our appearance on the Fifth Estate, we have a BBC documentary coming out soon, you can learn about education around MAID, about our advocacy work, and most importantly, Ed Fast's bill, C-314, how you can support that. So.
Okay. And maybe we can even put in somehow, some way, like the template that you've written.
Absolutely.
Like the scripts and those types of things.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, easy link.
And
copy and paste.
Yeah, I think you'll respect what I'm about to say, but I think maybe regardless of what your position is or how you feel at this moment, or I'm personally grappling with this. You know, I'm grappling with like with all the factors that go into this. Like you said, like people have a right to die with dignity, that's something that a lot of people say, and I really do believe that, and I'm grappling with all the intricacies of this. However, what you're making me realize and really want to get on board with is, like, the first small step is that we just need to slow the roll a bit. Because yes. We don't have, it's like we've entered this pilot. I mean, we've entered the pilot, say, 7 years ago when we even incorporated MADE, but we've not yet figured out the current phase to then be like, okay, green light, let's go to the next phase. And it doesn't sound like, and I want to do more education. I want to read more on mm-hmm. this and learn more about this, but you're educating me. It just doesn't feel like we should be getting the green light to move on to phase three, for instance.
Absolutely.
And that's what, like, the current situation is. It's like, wherever you fall in the spectrum of your belief in this or your understanding or whatever, what I'm hearing is, okay, for me, my belief is it doesn't sound like we're ready to move on to this next step. Yeah. And that's what we can do to support at this point.
Absolutely.
Is write your MP, give them a call, help to pass this bill, which will be preventing the legislation from expanding.
Absolutely.
In the way that it's going to be expanding March 17th, 2024.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Wow. You're incredible. And thank you for taking this on. I can only imagine it. You're in the trenches of probably the darkest time of your life, and by doing this work, you're having to relive it every day.
Yeah.
But you're doing that, and like you've said to me before, it's not going to bring your mom back. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing this for other people, and that is so noble and altruistic. Like, that's huge. You're taking on, you know, huge financial resources to retain this top law firm. And it's none of it's going to bring your mom back, but you're doing this for other people and other families. So thank you for that. And
yeah,
it's huge.
My mom was a psychiatric nurse, as I mentioned, and she cared about people who had mental illness, and she protected them and supported them. And my mom, when she left us, was not my mom. My mom would have never left us. And so doing this work is her legacy. It's helped with my grief. I mentioned to you that I was diagnosed with PTSD after my mom passed away, and a lot of my nightmares stopped when we started advocating. I've done a lot of work, as we talked about, different therapy modalities and just to be able to get through it, because it is really traumatic reliving these things. Mm-hmm. And you do kind of need to put it into a box, right? Talking about the legal components of it is one thing. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be an easier one in the interviews. And then when people ask me about who my mom was, that's when I lose it, you know? Mm. Then you relive, you know, the loss and those moments, you know, when you find out that this person that you fought for just chose to leave, or just chose, yeah, she chose to leave, you know? And that's hard. Mm-hmm. It's tough. So yeah, the advocacy helps the other, you know, the other side of that as well. And that's why we do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I can imagine everybody's got a story, and everybody has something that's affected them in some way. And this is very inspiring to just see, you know, where you're a mom of, like, you've got four kids under your roof, and you're making time for this, and you have a full-time job, you have a business partner that relies on you, there's a business that you run, clients rely on you, and you're still making time for this. And I think everybody has a cause that they could be advocating for. And I don't know, a weird sidebar that I just thought of is, a lot of people that come to me for, say, career coaching are like, I want to find meaning and fulfillment in the work I'm doing.
Yes.
And I often say, do you feel like it has to come from your work? Like, if you're a graphic designer and you're like, but what's it all about, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, but if you enjoy it, if you love that creative side, where might you find meaning and fulfillment elsewhere? And for some people, it's volunteering, and it could be advocacy work, and it doesn't have to be, you know, reducing your job. Like, you're in it. Like, you are advocacy with a capital A.
Yeah, I'm also writing a book.
Oh my gosh.
So, yes. You know, that is really, I'm taking one day off a week right now. So I've cut my workload down to 80%, so I can take that time and, you know, to do podcasts and any of those other kind of things, to talk about it. And, you know, eventually I think I'll ramp it back up. But my sister is amazing. She's been incredible throughout all of this as well. Like, I cannot imagine doing this without her. And So, you know, she's on maternity leave right now, and not saying that she has more time, but, you know, I can call her at any time of day and she's usually available, right? She's not stuck in the 9 to 5 at the moment. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, have you finished breastfeeding? Would you mind reviewing this application that I'm sending to Fraser Health? Yeah, no problem, you know. Oh. Or, hey, can you send photos to BBC? They need a couple more high quality images of mom. Like, that happened this morning.
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
BBC is still chomping at the bit.
They just
Of the documentary.
The documentary is just about to be released. And yeah.
Are you allowed to say anything about it?
I don't know all of the details yet. Okay. I know it's coming out before Christmas, so we'll be adding that onto the website again in memory of Donna Faith. You can also follow us on Instagram in memory of Donna Faith, and Facebook Donna's Law. So we'll have all of the information there. But yeah, I think it'll be a really interesting documentary because they are talking to people that are in support and against,
mm-hmm.
and doctors and psychiatrists, mm-hmm. and veterans. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually really excited to see it myself.
Yeah, which I love. I love when it's not like a pundit perspective where it's just taking like one point of view and just drilling down into that, like certain, perhaps like, I don't know, vegan documentaries we've seen where,
sure.
you know, it's only promoting one side of the story.
Course.
That's interesting. I'm excited to watch that. You're in it, right?
Yes.
Oh!
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't know if it was going to work out, because my sister was due to have her baby the week that they had flown out from the UK.
Of course.
So I was like, you know, really the birth of my nephew is going to take precedent, but he thankfully came 9 days early. He's a lovely little sweet thing, and so yeah, she wasn't able to be there. She had a little fresh one, but yeah, so I was able to film. They came to my house, and
oh my gosh.
My house has great natural light.
Your house is beautiful because you designed it yourself.
It turns out it's a great place for CTV and CBC and BBC to film.
It all works out. It all goes back to when you were an esthetician and you decided to do the design.
That's right.
Because then you designed the house that you can take international interviews from. I mean, we're laughing. It's
so
not even
weird.
Funny.
It's
I know.
It's so weird.
It is.
It's just, you know, I joke all the time. If you're not laughing, you're crying, right?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you just have to have dark humor. And...
I know. You said to your sister, like, sometimes, like, freaking Donna.
Oh, freaking Donna, man.
Donna,
what the heck?
It wasn't Donna, though.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't her.
No. I know she's proud of us, everything that we're doing.
Yeah. You're amazing. This was so hard to hear and such a joy and privilege to hear. And I feel so honored that you wanted to share the story on this platform and with me and in such an open and vulnerable way and just providing that education on the work that you're doing and that we can all do to come aboard and support and just slowing the roll and helping the government just figure things out first before expanding something that could be potentially pretty scary.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we just need a little more compassion.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's mm-hmm. the general thing. Mm-hmm. Just need to love one another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this seems like so trite now, but Alicia, what are you trying to figure out? I ask everyone that, as you know.
Oh my gosh, I knew that and I didn't even prepare. Oh my gosh, what am I trying to figure out?
Could be anything.
Oh, I'm having a hot flash now.
Perimenopause.
Trying to figure out my perimenopause. For real. I am trying to figure out who I am in this next chapter of my life, because each chapter, a little piece of you is left behind and a new piece develops. So I'm kind of in this transition period of, yeah. Who is Alicia 4.0?
Aww.
Yeah, figuring it out.
I love it. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. Excited to go for lunch with you. I'm drinking
wine.
Thank you for listening. You can access all resources mentioned in this episode via my website, andreabarr.com/podcast. And let's chat on Instagram. I'm at andreabarrcoaching and I reply to every DM I get. If you loved this episode, don't forget to quickly hit that button on your podcast app to give me a 5-star rating and drop in a review. It would truly mean the world. And if you're like me and love to share things that you love, send this episode to a friend who you think would appreciate this topic. Thanks again for listening, and I'll chat with you next week.